glad of Fontaine's suggestion of where to meet. "I don't imagine so," I said. "I'm not on the A-list, and probably barely make the B-list." We were sitting around a coffee table in a sort of alcove to his spacious office. Wood panelling, aircon, discreet lighting. A slim young woman, impeccably dressed, had served us coffee. Fontaine waved my response away. "One on the A-list, as you call it, tried hard with no result. Another charged me for doing nothing. A third, I suspect, intended to exploit me in some way. They had nice suits and offices. You have a reputation, which is worth more than the trappings." When he said that, I couldn't help looking around the room. I drank some of the excellent coffee and didn't say anything. Neither did he. Gerard Fontaine was 49 and the CEO of a company that bore his name. My quick research following his initial phone call told me that he owned various interlocking enterprises, beauty parlours that related to fashion boutiques and high-end catering services, holiday resorts that tied in with an interest in cruise ships, recreational boat and plane operations, and ecotourism. "I'm a very wealthy man," he said, after his silence. "But since my daughter disappeared, I've felt like a pauper. Can you understand that?"
"Not sure."
"I understand you have a daughter."
"I do," I said. "But I didn't know about her until she was almost an adult. We're very close now, and I have grandchildren. But it all feels more like a friendship than the kind of attachment you're talking about."
Juliana got her looks from her mother, who had died of cancer when she was 5. Fontaine was barely of medium height and heavily built with a high colour. At a guess, he kept the flab under control with exercise, diet, and steam baths, and would always have to. He had a good head of hair above a fleshy face that sagged in spots.
"You may be lucky in that," he said, "but my situation is very different. I couldn't believe that a creature as wonderful as Juliana could be created by me, and I cannot accept her loss."
I nodded. He must have spent thousands on having flyers printed and distributed, and on full-page newspaper ads and television spots. He'd announced a $250,000 reward for any information leading to the whereabouts of his daughter.
"Other than that, inability to accept," I said, "is there any solid evidence that she's still alive?"
He hadn't touched his coffee. Now he picked up his cup and drained it in 2 gulps.
"I'm encouraged," he said.
"How's that?"
"Every other investigator I've spoken to has been so eager to get the commission that they haven't asked that sort of basic question. The answer is no. I established a website people could contact with information, but all I've had are crank theories, false sightings, and foul accusations."
"Accusations?"
"Of course. As you must know, the first suspect in a case like this is the father. I don't know how often that turns out to be true, but you wouldn't believe some of the unspeakable suggestions sick minds out there have made."
"Juliana showed no signs of disturbance or dislocation?"
He hesitated.
"A couple of years ago, I would have said none. She was a happy, well-adjusted child who got on well with me, her brother, Foster, and her stepmother. There were the usual mood swings at puberty, tiffs with friends, food fads, and the like, but nothing troubling. But then she seemed to become moody and bad-tempered all the time. Nothing we did was right. We didn't worry too much about it, just waited for her to grow out of it."
"I'll be honest with you, Mr. Fontaine. The likelihood is that your daughter was abducted opportunistically and has been killed and disposed of."
"No.
But just perhaps not. Just perhaps something else happened. The trail."